creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
Previously on Culture Click, we journeyed to West St. Paul to learn about the legacy a nun named Sister Giovanni, lovingly referred to as Sister G, left behind. What started out as a house with 8 students being tutored by a brazen woman of faith transformed into a school that not only provides high school education, but also job certifications, bilingual education, and more. The Guadalupe Alternative Program, known as GAP, has changed the lives of thousands for the better. Today we visit with Sister Giovanni's fellow sisters of Notre Dame as they share with us stories of Sister G's strong character and drive to help others succeed. Then we'll journey back to the Guadalupe Alternative Programs, where those who worked with Sister G share with us how she was not your ordinary nun. In closing, we will hear an interview with actor and Winona native Rosalie Tensett, as well as an excerpt of her performance portraying Sister Giovanni from the play Hometown Heroes, originally written by Lance Belville. Up first, Sister Helen Cook fills us in on her memories of Sister Mary Giovanni. I'm Terry Tensett, and you're listening to Culture Click.
My name is Helen Cook, and Sister Giovanni was a very good friend. She knew how to grab the talents of people. She had a lot of volunteers, and they might only be there for one semester, and those were special courses that they taught. Seminarians, I remember, Jesuit seminarians often helped out. But she corralled me back in, maybe the 80s, maybe a little bit earlier than that. And she said, "I need you." And so I started computer classes for her staff. And all of it was rented equipment. We used what we got. And they learned how to program. They learned something called BASIC. You know, it was these early years of computers in education. But she saw the possibility. And one of the things that she did that impressed me very much was that she would not allow any of her students to take the programming class until they first learned how to type properly. I wish I had learned that from her, because I'm still a hunt and peck person. But I thought that was one of her great tenets. I mean, she latched on to principles like that, and she followed through with them, and they carried students through for life.
My name is Sister Lorianne Stanton, SSND. In the summer of 1983, Sister Giovanni had me work as part of the program. And we would be there from morning till late afternoon. And she had a balance that in the morning, the students would work on reading and math. And we all taught seriously and educated them the best possible way. The afternoon, they would do crafts and beadwork and so forth. So it was a balance of between education and then learning something that was fun for them. So they really enjoyed that.
My name is Sister Jean Ersfeld. I'm a school sister of Notre Dame. And in the winter of 1970, as postulant is a pre-sister, and so we had an opportunity to work in her project. And one of the things we remember so vividly, those were the early days when she was just starting the high school program. She was known to go out in the morning, in these cold winter mornings like this, and knock, go from door to door, and actually get the students out of bed to get to class. So, I mean, she had that kind of dedication toward getting the enrollment up. So we were very edified by the dedication that she brought to the, not only to the classroom, but to the, before the class even began.
Sister Giovanni was a woman who fought for equality. Sister Helen Cook tells us more.
I bought her house, but it was after she had died. But I turned her bedroom into kind of a shrine, because there were so many things. I mean, she walked in Selma in behalf of Martin Luther King's dream of racial equality. She stood out in the foreground. The mayor knew her very, very well downtown, and she would come in and ask for justice and a better outlook on education and jobs. I remember her going to see landowners who refused to rent an apartment. They had an objection, you know, to this particular nationality, and she was there fighting for those people.
Another testament to Sister Giovanni's tenacity was her ability to approach government officials. Sister Helen Cook goes on to explain how Republican Senator David Durenberger from Minnesota was involved. We'll also learn how Sister Giovanni made sure those who she affiliated within the government aligned with her values.
Because, you know, he came up to see her.
Yes, Durenberger. No, I don't exactly know exactly how it started, but that was the beginning also of her fundraising on a big, you know, benefit dinners. And Durenberger was the very first one who spoke at her benefit dinner. She believed in getting politicians on her side, but she was very careful about her own standards. And so she was not afraid to stand up to any one of them and question any values that just didn't seem to fit with racial equality, equal housing, jobs on the West Side. I think if one looks into the history of the West Side, you would have to put her right up there on top, because she was right there foraging for the people. She was great. I'd live with her memory.
Up next, we head back to the Guadalupe Alternative Programs to visit with those who wish to share memories of working with Sister Giovanni. Alan Selinsky, the executive director of the Guadalupe Alternative Programs, shares with us how Sister Giovanni didn't fit the mold when it came to a nun and reasons why she was considered a renegade.
I think it was her sister. Somebody said that she was born with a silver spoon. And I think it was her sister. Somebody said, oh, I'd have to be a ladle with a mouth like that. She was very outspoken, very direct. She knew I got a kick out of her. Whenever the door would close, she'd make some comments that she knew I would laugh at. And she said, because someone said something, and she said, oh, those nuns, it's all pious drivel coming out of their mouth. Like, she didn't like that. She didn't like, you know, all these people that were overly nice, but there wasn't substance behind it. She hated that. She could curse. She did things that you wouldn't expect from a nun at all. Being a nun wasn't a honor for her, because in that era, think of it, she was born in 1914. Nuns were in the Catholic Church. Nuns were worshipped, you know, oh, they're religious. They're better than us, blah, blah, blah. That wasn't her. That wasn't her at all. She knew she was rough around the edges. She never made excuses for that. She wasn't ashamed of that. She was who she was. She loved a good story. I mean, one time she said, I don't care if that's true or not, as long as it makes a good story. But she loved to talk, and she was a storyteller. When we would drive around in a car, it was so cute, because here she was really intense. At the school, she was very intense. It was, you had to be a little, we were walking on eggshells at times, because she was, when a kid would be, when she'd have to kick somebody out or whatever, she was not necessarily in a good mood. But we'd get her in a car, and she would tell stories of oh, I told that archbishop one time, blah, 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 blah. They were always interesting. I mean, she was always a very colorful person, had all kinds of personality. And what she felt was on her face at any moment, you did not have to wonder what she was thinking. Laws and rules and all those things, sure, you know, we follow those. But she never was one of those type of people that the rules were what's important. It was always the people that were important, the people that were here before her.
I had the opportunity to visit with Linda, who spent 12 years of her life working alongside Sister Giovanni. This individual shares with us stories that show Sister Giovanni's character, how she could be stern yet loving at the same time. One thing that became very apparent the entire time I was at the Guadalupe Alternative Programs was how dedicated Sister Giovanni was to making sure the kids would succeed in life and that they would have a dream. It's a constant theme that will run through the remaining coverage of Sister Giovanni's life. I'm Terry Tensett, and you're listening to Culture Click. We're speaking with Linda Vasquez.
Yes.
From the Guadalupe Alternative Programs. What's your role here?
I'm the bookkeeper for the school. Lots of little hats we wear.
And you've been with the organization, if you care to tell me, about how long?
It was 36 years last June. It'll be 37 this June 9th.
And you had the pleasure of working with Sister G for about 12 years.
I did.
And during that time, I'm sure you got to know her personality.
Oh, my.
Her tenacity. Can you tell me about the Sister G that you knew?
Wow. Sister G was a person with a big heart and a direction, and nobody or nothing better get in the way of her direction. When the saying is said, it's my way or the highway, that didn't just apply to the kids. That applied to everything and everybody, including her staff. Because if she had something she wanted done, it had to be done. And how did she get it done? Not always with the gentlest hand or gentlest voice, but what was behind it was gentle, because everything was always done with the purpose of what's going to make it better for the kids, what's going to make it better for the community. It was never a selfless kind of gain for her. I can tell you a story about a young girl who was in our school who was very, very, very needy, but we were in a time when kids were, and as all kids do, they have a fad and a phase that they go through. And this young girl showed up one day, and she had her hair shaved very close to her scalp around her ears, and she had black and white checkers painted on the side of her head, and went into Giovanni's effective living class, and she just grabbed that girl and walked her to the bathroom and scrubbed her head and said, "Do not ever come here with that ever again. That is not becoming to a young lady." And the girl was a little angry, and she was like, "How dare she do that?" But she went home, and by God, she was back the next day, and not only the next day, but when she had a daughter of her own, she made sure she came to school here. It may sound harsh what she did, but the kids understood that it was done for a reason and because she loved them, and she always told them that. She always said, "It's because I love you."
Where did her tenacity come from?
Oh, I think part of it's her ancestry. I mean, she always bragged, you know, "I'm a hot-headed Frenchman," and she could be. And she had no problem with relating to that. And I also think because she grew up in a family with three brothers and she was the only girl, she always felt she was defending her brothers, that she grew strong and kind of bullish-like, kind of got what she wanted by doing that. So it kind of became part of her pattern.
Did you ever see her crack?
Crack. I can tell you an episode of a temper, and you can use it or you don't have to use it. One of the things that we used to do at the school is, because of the poverty in the community and the times, we used to help families at the holiday time have food on their table. And we would close the school down from operating as a school the week of Thanksgiving, getting ready to create Thanksgiving baskets. And she'd be campaigning for people to donate money to help buy the food that would go in those baskets. And she had an outreach of many, many contributors. And we would empty classrooms. She'd go to Cub with some of the students and staff and buy cases of canned corn, cranberries, and all the fixings that would go into making holiday dinner. People would donate turkeys. And she had one connection where the guy donated fresh potatoes, and they came in like 500-pound bags or something, and we had to rebag them. And my office was just up the hallway from the room where the bags were, and we were part of the St. Paul Public Schools one year, and when we were part of the St. Paul Public Schools, we couldn't close the school down to get ready. They didn't allow that. So she allowed the teachers to leave the building on field trips, which was totally against her beliefs. She didn't believe that field trips were as necessary, that you did more effective work when you had them in-house. So she would relinquish that and let them take them out. And they were all leaving as we were preparing these rooms. And down the hall from my office, there were the potatoes, and she put three young people in there to rebag them. And they rebagged them according to how the size of the family. If we had bigger families, we put in more potatoes. If we had smaller families, they put in less. And the kids had been at it for a while, and they wanted to have a cigarette break. And she told them no, that they had to finish the job. And she came up to me and said, "Keep an eye on them," she said. I told them they couldn't go out for a break. She says, "Make sure they don't." So a couple of times I went down the hall, and I checked on them, and they were diligently packing potatoes. And I went back to my office, and I was working.
and a group of kids with a teacher were leaving in the back for a field trip, and all of a sudden, I heard her bellow my name. Because in those days, that's how you got called. I mean, she just let it out, Linda! And I thought, uh-oh, that don't sound good. I got up and I went, and I walked back to her and I said, what's, what? And I didn't even get close enough. And all of a sudden, whap, I got slapped right across the face. And I was stunned. And this was in front of the three kids, the kids boarding on the bus, and a teacher. And I just, I was in shock. And I just stood there and I thought, what? And then I saw those three kids were out smoking. And I didn't know what to say. And I just looked at the three kids and I said, you should get in that room and get a part of what I just got. And I turned away and I walked away. And I went back to my office because I was getting ready to deliver the payroll down to a payroll processing place. And yeah, it hit me hard and I cried and I left and I went and delivered the thing. And I didn't know that I was carrying her handprint on my face. And I get down to the accountant's office and she says to me, what happened to you? And I said, what do you mean? She says, you have a hand mark on your face. I didn't know it. So then I told her the story, and she said, oh, you have to tell the president of the board. And I went, I don't know what I'm going to do, Maureen. I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. So that night I went home. And the reason I went back to work, and I had been working with St. Paul Public Schools, and I came to work here, is my daughter was born without a femur head and a hip socket. And I was drowning in medical bills. So I had to go back to work, and I'm going, I got to have this job. We got bills to pay. What am I going to do? So I talked to my husband. Now, one of the things I knew about Giovanni at that point in time is she's not a lady who says, I'm sorry, or I made a mistake. And I thought, so I'll never hear that from her. But you know what? I prayed a little bit, and the answer came. Go back to work. She has to look at you every day knowing what she did. She'll never tell you she's sorry, but she's going to be reminded of it every day she looks at you. And that's what I did, and I'm still here.
Well, obviously you respected her still enough to see her.
I did. Maybe it wasn't her at the person at the time that happened, but I respected what she was doing for the kids and the community. And I loved the woman.
How do you keep her memory alive with you?
Well, we have pictures of her all around the school. It helps, but you know,
it's, I heard 30-some.
You know, I'll tell you another story that happened here. We believe she's here. Her presence is here. We've had some strange things happen here at the school, which give us evidence that her presence is here. One of the things that happened is in our workroom where our copy machines are, there was a painting that she did with Sister Anne's help, and it was hanging there for many years, and our secretary wanted to move it. And I said, no, Lolly, you can't move that. I said, that's Giovanni's painting. Everything of her has been removed. And Lolly goes, I'm just going to put it on a different wall. And she went to reach for it, and that picture started to swing. And it's on a solid wall. And it was surrounded by bookcases. And Lolly jumped back and said, I'm not touching it. And we left it. So, and we've had elevators run when there's nobody else in the building. One of the things that happened 2 years ago at Halloween, Giovanni loved Halloween. She would wear her habit, and with her habit, she'd put on crazy little costumes over her habit. Like, she had this silly hat that had a headband that opened up into an umbrella, and she'd put these googly eyes on that would hang down, and she would just be a character. And so I was dressed as a she-devil, and Regina, who takes photos for our yearbook, she said, I want to get a picture of you for the yearbook. And we were all down the cafeteria because we had just had our costume competition with the kids. And she said, here, stand here. Well, here I was standing in front of one of the posters where a sister is, and didn't think much of that till Regina took the picture. And she goes, Linda, I got to retake the picture. She says, I must have moved. And I said, okay. So she did, and then we looked at it. Behind me was this huge blur, but everything was in focus in that picture except that blur. He said, no, that's a spirit, and we believe that.
One of Sister G's best friends, Sister Ann Louise, who was our art teacher here, who was deathly afraid to come to work here when she was a young nun because of Sister's reputation. And when I say sister reputation, she had a reputation with the school sisters of being just that hard to work with because of it being, it's my way or the highway. And so she was reluctant to come to work here, but she came on orders, and they wound up being the best of friends. They shared households with other sisters, and even when it got to be a smaller group, the two of them stayed together. Sister Giovanni died on December 26, 1990. Sister Ann Louise died on December 26, 2008, almost the same hour Sister Giovanni died. New Year's Eve day here at the Gap School, I came to work, and I was the first one in the building. And I came in the back door and unlocked it, and the hallway was dark, and I flicked on the lights, and I turned, and the door that leads into our hallway has a window so you can see if somebody's coming so you don't get hit with the door. And when I looked straight ahead, Sister Ann Louise was standing at the back window looking out the window in the house they shared. And when I blinked and came back, she was gone, and I had to question my sanity after that. I was pretty shaken to the point where when the next employee who came in 10 minutes later said, "Are you all right?" And I'm going, and then I explained what I saw, and I said, I'm really questioning, did I see what I saw? But I believe it. I believe it. I think the two of them are here, but I, for whatever purpose, I'm not sure.
What do you think she would have to say about the GAP program now?
Well, a couple of things that I personally think she would say is she hated counseling, and we have a huge mental health counseling program, and she would not like that. She also had a phrase that Rosalie used in the first play that wasn't in this one. And the phrase was, "I'm an educator." Do you know what the difference is between an educator and a teacher? An educator turns kids on. A teacher regurgitates facts. And we have a lot of teachers here.
But overall, she'd be proud?
I would certainly hope so. I think she'd be excited to see that there's another cultural aspect to this program, that, you know, her love was the Hispanic people because that's what this community predominantly was. And now it's so diversified. And because there's such a huge need for the immigrants from Burma, that we have the chance to work with them and turn them on and educate them and help them learn the language. That aspect she would be thrilled about. She would be giddy over that.
Why do you think Sister G didn't like counseling?
The kids that came to the school weren't helped, and they had all come from establishments and counseling to death. And so if it didn't help them, what was the need for it? She also felt there were other ways to reach them, and you didn't have to counsel a kid to death to help them.
How did she set a tone with the kids?
Well, one of the things Giovanni did in the school was every morning she'd be at the front door to greet them when they'd come in. And she would say to them, "Tell me three good things about today." And some of them would come up with, you know, three things, and others would say, "Well, there isn't anything about today." And she said, "Yeah, let me help you. I'll tell you, number one, you got up. Number two, you're here. Isn't that great? Now you tell me number three." And the kids would say, come up with something. And it would just like change their whole attitude for the day. Instead of walking in with this dragged out negative feeling, now they were energized and they had a positive thing on their side.
So in a way, she kind of was a counselor.
In her way, yes. She did it. And it also is mothering. I mean, we as parents, when we have kids, we kind of do things like that with our kids, too. You want to give them the right tools for the day to get them through the day. And that's what I felt she did.
What's the number one lesson she taught you, Linda?
Boy, don't give up on your dreams.
Is there anything else you would like to add that you don't feel you had a chance to do?
No, I think you've pretty much covered a lot. There's, you know, how do you surmise 12 years of with a person that I've carried in my heart?
Thank you for sharing your heart with us.
You're welcome.
Back in 1989, actor and Winona native Rosalie Tensett performed in a piece written by Lance Belville on the life of Sister Giovanni. The piece was one of three plays in a series entitled Hometown Heroes, presented at the Great American History Theater in St. Paul, Minnesota. Up next, we hear an excerpt of the production performed by Rosalie during the 100-year celebration gala of Sister Giovanni's life, which took place January 8th at the Wellstone Center in West St. Paul. The section of the play that we will hear explains how Sister Giovanni was given her name the day she became a nun and her reasons for becoming a nun. Following the excerpt, we visit with Rosalie on what it was like portraying a woman that left behind a legacy. I'm Terry Tunset, and you're listening to Culture Click.
Terrible time with those nuns trying to get money. Mankato, Minnesota, nuns boot camp. That cowboy, she'll never make a nun. See, I wasn't simpering around the way they expect nuns to do. See, I was a town boy. My brothers, they were too shy to fight their battles, so I was always fighting their battles for them. I was always in trouble at the convent because I was always fighting, or loud. For instance, they always expected the nuns to be the quiet ones. Nuns have quiet, refined voices, Helen. That was my name before I took the name of my patron saint. I mean, they didn't even like the way I walked. See, they expect nuns to sort of, you know, mince around, you know, sort of pussyfoot it. Ew, it makes me sick. The Mistress Apostolus, she called me Sister Agricola. Get it? Means farmer. Oh, Sister Agricola was wonderful. She tended our garden, she raised lovely vegetables, and she hauled manure all day long. That's all right. I didn't care. I figured those were the sacrifices he made to become a nun. I didn't mind. Well, the big day finally came for us to get our veils and our names. And I was scared skinny they were going to name me Sister Agricola. I wanted Don Giovanni Bosco. Because he was this wonderful Italian saint of the last century. See, Don Bosco attracted all the orphans in Turin around him. See, back in those days, if you were an orphan, or if you were naughty, or you didn't have enough food in your family, and so they had to get rid of you, they just threw you out in the streets. Sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Well, Don Bosco attracted all these orphans by singing and dancing and juggling and magic. Oh, he was great! And I wanted to take his name when I became a nun. Well, the big day came. And we were all kneeling at the altar. And I looked up at the Lord and I said, Lord, please don't let them name my Sister Agricola. The bishop came over and he put his hands on my head and he said, Helen, from this day forward, you will be known as... And there was this eternity of a pause. And I thought, he's going to name me Agricola. He said, Sister Mary Giovanni. Oh, the angels just leapt up and they sang. I mean, I just wanted to run right out of that cathedral with my wonderful new name. I wanted to run up and scream my wonderful new names. And you see, it didn't matter. All making fun of me because of the way I walked and the way I talked and the way I was. It didn't matter because I was a full-fledged nun. Don't ever give up on your dreams. I know you want to sometimes, but you get yourself a dream and you hang onto it. I know what it's like to have even the skinniest, the tiniest of dreams. Four in my family... Middle of the Depression. My father lost his creamery business and he left my mother and us. Middle of the ninth grade. So embarrassed my father had left us. I tried to keep it from the other kids. So you see, I know what it's like to be poor. I know what it's like to have a father run off and leave you. I know what it's like to hate him so much because he hurt your mother so much. I hated his guts. It took me a long time as a nun to come to peace with it and forgive him. But I did. And dreams. Nobody ever lets your dreams alone. I had a dream to become a full-fledged nun. And the day I decided to become one, I was standing at the board washing it. And this girl calls from across the room, "Hey, Helen, what do you want to be when you grow up?" "A nun." "A nun?" "He told you how to get married to someone?" Well, I looked around the room. And I picked the best one. I wanted to be a little sister of the poor. Why? Because they rode big wagons around town. They rode horses. They were out there getting things done. They seemed like my kind of nuns. Well, after finally receiving my veils and my vow and my name, I felt like I wasn't good enough. I mean, I wanted to save the world. I wanted to save souls. I had so much love to give. I particularly wanted kids who knew need. And then my mama asked, "Helen, all the other sisters, when they were getting their vows, they were all so serious. Why were you grinning so?" "Because, mama, I am a bride of Christ." "Isn't that the greatest thing in the world to be? Why would I wear a long face?" Now, this dear old hat, people ask me all the time, "Why do you still wear it?" And I tell them, "It took me so long to get into this thing, I'm not about to take it off now." Besides, if I showed up at the pearly gates wearing anything else, they wouldn't recognize me. I wouldn't get in.
You just heard an excerpt from Hometown Heroes, written by Lance Belville, on the life of Sister Mary Giovanni, founder of the Guadalupe Alternative Programs. We now visit with the actor of the production and Winona native, Rosalie Tenset. Rosalie shares with us what it was like to embody the character of Sister Giovanni, how she went about research on the character, and what she took away from the production. I'm Terry Tenset, and you're listening to Culture Click. Rosalie, what was the first step in getting to know your character?
When they first asked me to portray Sister G, the first step was going to spend time with her. So she was teaching at the school that she had created, called the Guadalupe Alternative Project. And so I spent 3 weeks in and out of the classroom with her. I attended the class that she taught called Effective Living, which was an amazing class. And I also would be in the office with her and just following her up and down the hallways. And initially, I thought I was there. In my mind, as an actor, I thought I was there, you know, learn her mannerisms and obviously her spirit. But you really end up being caught up in the enthusiasm, and you basically are being taught by Sister G the entire time you're with Sister G. She kind of takes over your life, which was exciting because she's a force to be reckoned with. She's an amazing woman. It was not work to do the research. You couldn't wait to go back and watch her work with the kids to see her passion for what it is that she was doing. It was really her life's mission to make these kids' lives a better place for them, to help them believe in themselves, really to help them believe in themselves. It was very exciting. So this time when they asked me to do it, because I haven't done it in, I guess it would be almost 20 years, really. I had to look at the dates. It's been over 20 years since I played her. And I was like, am I going to remember all the mannerisms? Am I going to, you know, yes, the mannerisms and everything are there. But this time it was really about what was the spirit of Sister G? Like, what is it that make people believe in themselves? Luckily, Alan Selinsky, who's the executive director, had a DVD of the performance, which I did not know he had. When Lance found the script, which was a miracle. He didn't even know he had the script. He's now living in San Francisco. He's no longer at the History Theater. And he just happened to find a box over in the corner that he had not unpacked or looked at in years. And he opened it up, and the first thing there was, it was almost like divine purpose. He found the script of Sister G. When he pulled the script and he sent it to me, though, it was nothing like the DVD. So this was a bit of a struggle because I remember this. He barely finished the script before we were supposed to open. And I remember us in the rehearsal process, and because I had spent so much time with her and he had, and the whole premise of the script is really that when the people walk into the theater, they're in my effective living class, me as Sister G. They're in my class. So I had spent so much time in the classroom with her, I really knew how she operated the class. So there was a bit of improvisation that happens with it. So the show was never quite the same night to night. Not that I went off script, but I did things based on what the audience, you know, if things happened in the audience, I would work with that. I would go off of that, just how she operated in the classroom. And so, you know, what was captured that night on DVD was one particular thing. Now, the script was very different than what was on that DVD. And it was more like how I remembered the show really went. So when we went to go do this version of the show for this particular night that we just did this benefit, I literally had to go back through and retype out the whole script, like backing up the DVD and retyping out the script so I could relearn the show, because it's been over 20 years. So, and I could look at the mannerisms and whatnot, but having a perspective on it now, also being older now and looking at it now and being a person who's coached, because I coach kids for acting, you know, so I've worked with kids a lot, plus I have my own child and I have stepkids now. I have a different perspective on it now with age, looking back at it and looking at kids as well and looking at the message. So when I went to go make cuts to the script and I just rearranged things that would work for this particular evening. And I was like looking at the through line of it. And I just had a little bit of a different perspective on it just with age this time. And the script is great. And it really worked through line wise this time in a different way. And it had it hit home in a different way personally for me.
In your time with her, did you learn more about her as a person, her background, her history?
I did, because of talking to her. I didn't have to ask a lot of questions because a lot of things were available in the script, and Lance had done a lot of that research. What you got a clear perspective on is that she was completely selfless. Everything that she was doing, and she was tough. She was really, really tough, which I could totally relate to. I had very, very tough grandmothers. I mean, people who know us from Winona will know Marvel Tencent and Bernadine Myers. No, they were not. They were tough love grandmothers as well. So, I mean, those were people that I already knew very well, and I knew tough love already as a person very well. So Sister G was very, that was a character I already kind of knew. I knew people who were very tough. They were tough because they wanted you to succeed. They weren't going to stand for nonsense because they wanted you to succeed, and they didn't want you to make mistakes that you later on would regret. And she was extremely tough. And when she told you to do it, it was a my way or the highway situation. And it was because she loved you. And she would always say that. It's because I love you and because God loves you, and together we must prepare you because the world does not love you. And she was just trying to get you ready so that you could understand that if you learned it here, you would not learn it later on where it could be a matter of life and death. For these kids that came to her, these were kids that this was the last chance they had. Every other program had failed them. They had come from gangs. They had lived on the streets. They had been using drugs. They had, you know, a variety of circumstances, either a combination or one or the other. This was not a group of kids who were given a lot of other options. She was basically giving them another chance, but you had to abide by her rules. And so if you were really looking for another chance in life, she was willing to give it to you, but you had to obey her set of rules. And there were no exceptions to it.
The reason why Lance wrote the script in the first place was the History Theater was doing a project, correct? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
That's correct. Part of the Great American History Theater was doing a show called Homegrown Heroes. And I believe it was three different plays. You know, I should have done my research before we had this interview. One was, I believe, a baseball player who was a minor league. And then Sister G, and there was another person that they were honoring. There were three pieces. They were all about 30 to 40 minutes long. You know, the Great American History Theater, their mission is to present stories about Minnesota, local history, and keep it alive. And that particular piece was honoring local historical figures that had made a significant impact on the history of Minnesota and what these individuals had done for their local communities. And so she didn't always walk with a cane, you know, so we decided I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to make it into that whole act, but that I did all the different other mannerisms, you know, so as we were picking and choosing things that would give her essence, but she had very specific movements with her hands and her mouth. There was a lot of movement that she did. She did not walk like a nun. She did not talk like a nun. You know, she was almost kicked out of the convent. I mean, they tried to get rid of her. She was not your typical nun. This was not a nun that fit in. It was not about Catholicism necessarily. It was about saving kids. She took Don Giovanni Bosco. She took him as her patron saint because he had attracted orphans of Turin around him, and he had helped orphans off the streets of Turin. That was her mission in life, was to help kids who knew need. She didn't care what their background was, what their religion was. Right now, that population is serving Hmong, kids from Burma, Latino. When she started it, it was primarily Latino kids, teaching them English. It was about God. She always said that God loves you. But it was not about organized religion. It was more about spirituality to her and a belief in oneself and believing in your dreams.
What did you take away from your whole experience now, back then?
You know, it's kind of like what Sister G talks about. It's about perspectives. Like for her, the fact that she was giving up nothing. She was giving up nothing. I think that when people think of nuns, they think of self-sacrifice and giving up everything. She was giving up nothing. She was doing what she wanted to do. This was what she wanted to do. She wanted to help kids achieve their dreams. That's what made her happy. To achieve a dream, do whatever it is. Don't ever give up on yourselves. Get yourself a dream and hang on to it. You know, ever since I started working on the play again, just repeating that to myself, you know, get yourself a dream and hang on to it. Don't ever let anybody else get in the way of your dream. And I mean, that seems like a very simple concept, but if you live your daily life by that concept, there's really nothing you can't do. You just have to put the steps in place to make that dream come true. And I think that was the blessing that she gave everybody she came into contact with. She didn't care how she had to go about it to do it. She was going to make dreams come true. And I think it's wonderful, you know, and she had no fear as to how she did it. I mean, she confronted gangs. She confronted bishops. She did whatever she had to do to financially reach out to make it happen. She had no fear to do it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks again to all who shared with us the legacy of Sister Mary Giovanni. A special thank you goes out to the Sisters of Notre Dame, Alan Selinsky and Linda Vasquez at the Guadalupe Alternative Programs, and Winona native and actor Rosalie Tenset. More information on Sister Giovanni and the Guadalupe Alternative Programs can be found at www.gabschool.org. More information on Winona native and actor Rosalie Tenset can be found at www.rosalietenseth.com. I'm Terry Tenset, and you've been listening to Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM. On the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.